What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 62. We're doing a whole series on dieting, losing weight, getting healthy, what not to do, what to do. So this is going to be an episode on the Mediterranean diet, which is something you definitely shouldn't do. And we're going to go into all the history of the diet and really where it comes from, what's wrong with it, what's good with it, all those things. But first, let's do a quick check-in with Tom. How's your week been?
It's been really good. So yeah, on last week's podcast, we did the whole calories in, calories out, and why cutting calories is a horrible idea. So this is a slightly better diet, but still far from perfect.
Yeah.
So first, I just wanted to say, like, if you guys want to show your support for the podcast, please feel free to rate and review on any of your favorite podcast providers. We're pretty much everywhere by now. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. And then we also have a donate button on our homepage and all over the website. Just look for a yellow donate button. It's pretty bright. You can't miss it. So yeah, we thank you for any sort of donation or any way you want to support. We greatly appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to talk about, it was, I don't know, two or three podcasts ago, whenever the cooking for dogs was. One of the reasons that I like spent so much time looking into like dieting and how that affects animals.
That was, yeah, that podcast was your baby. That was, like, your thing.
I don't know how I completely, like, skipped over this fact, but one of my dogs has epilepsy. He used to get seizures. I mean, luckily, it wasn't anything crazy, like, five times a day. It was, like, mostly, like, once a week. Maybe more often because I'm not with him all the time. So, like, who knows? So, that's one thing I wanted to look into to, like, okay, I heard keto, it's good for humans. Can it be good for dogs? And ever since I switched him over to that type of diet, I think he's only had one, maybe two seizures in the last, like, 3 years.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, I mean, like, it's definitely beneficial. So, that's one thing I wanted to talk about. The one time I do remember that he did have a seizure, we added, like, sweet potatoes to, like, that soup. Just because, like, hey, it's a real food, anything like that. But mm-hmm. It's like, no,
he's sensitive.
Yeah, so, like, no carbs. I mean, maybe we'll add some squash or maybe some carrots occasionally. But it's almost all, like, meat.
Yeah, so he's a He's like a wiener dog, right? If I remember right. Or terrier?
I don't know. I got him from the shelter. So okay. He's probably yes to both of those.
Yeah, he's small and long. Like, he's not a big-ass dog at all. Yeah, so I had a dog called Raider. He was a wiener dog, like bull terrier mix. And he had epilepsy, too, back in the day.
Yeah.
And obviously, I didn't know anything about this then. And I remember him suffering seizures. I mean, at least, I'd say, every month, you know?
Yeah, and you guys had him on, like, medication for almost his whole life, too.
Yeah, we did. So, I wish I would have known about this stuff back then. But, you know, you live and you learn, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy how powerful this this diet can be.
Yeah, I always say food is medicine. Like, genuinely believe that. Yeah. Actually, I just talked to some lady today on Instagram, actually. Social media is a trip. Like, who you can, you know, get a hold of. So, she eats, she actually might listen to this. I'm not 100% sure. But high meat, you know, high meat is.
Isn't that like not rancid, but along those lines, like old?
Pretty close. Yeah, 100%. So she's obviously a zero carb lady, and she pushes this shit, man. Like, she has videos. I just saw them today of ground beef fermented in like a jar for like a week, and she eats it. Liver for like a week, and she eats it. And,
does it taste good?
She says, I forget how she describes it, but she describes it tasting not bad. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay.
You know how some people drink wine, like, oh, this tastes like oranges, like some bullshit. When, you know, it really doesn't taste like oranges, but whatever. So it was kind of like that. Like, oh, it has hints of honey. You know what I'm saying? Or some bullshit. You know what I mean? But yeah, so I got in a little conversation with her about that, you know, because I was just, you know, we've talked about it. I'm not into raw meat.
Yeah, me either. It just, I have no appetite for that at all.
Yeah, me either, right? So if I'm not going to eat raw meat, I'm definitely not going to eat, like, old raw meat. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, you know, do you think there's, like, a real benefit to this? Or do you just like it? Right? Because I'm not, because, like, I'm a zero-carb guy. Like, I'm on board with this whole food as medicine shit, 100%. Yeah. And she just thinks it's beneficial. It really helped her with some autoimmune issues. And she, like, swears by it.
I mean, okay.
Yeah, I said, do your thing, you know? Yeah. I said, cool. And actually, I'm thinking, we've talked about this before a little bit, having somebody on the podcast who does do a raw meat diet. Maybe she'll do it.
Because I don't know anybody. Like, I've never had, like, a conversation. I have to listen to podcasts about it. So I'd really like to have that type of conversation.
Yeah. And honestly, she seemed pretty articulate just through the messaging. So it'd be cool to have her on. It seems like she's knowledgeable. She mentioned the Inuit who, like, left food out for, like, months, which they 100% did. You know, I knew about that. And so, like, little fishes they would do that with. So I don't know. That'd be cool. Or, that's not even what's new with me. That literally just happened today. I wanted to talk real quick about... So with this podcast, if people don't know, the Mediterranean diet is kind of, it's a little old for diets. You know what I'm saying? Like 90s or so, 80s.
Oh, I mean, it kind of depends on what definition you have for it.
It changes, right? Yeah. So the original one definitely came out in the 80s. It's been revised 100 times. But so some people really don't know too much about the Mediterranean diet, but it's staple, or at least it's, I don't know. What's the right word? It revolves around olive oil.
Yeah, that's what separates it from the standard American diet.
Exactly, it's olive oil, right? And I read in one of the first books I read going down this rabbit hole of health was The Great Cholesterol Con. I'm pretty sure the author is Kendrick Malcolm, or Malcolm Kendrick, I might have that backwards. But he mentioned that when the liver makes fat, the only fat it makes is saturated fat, right? And I was like, okay, I knew that. I believed it. I was like, okay. But I've heard multiple times that the liver can make oleic acid, which is the same fat in olive oil, right? And that's not saturated fat. It's a monounsaturated fat, right? So I was like, well, what's going on here? And so this week kind of motivated me to do a little bit of a research. It didn't take me long. I just had to Google a few things. Oh, hold on. Yahoo, a few things. When did we talk about that?
That was last week.
That was last week? Okay, listen to Lexi's podcast if you want to hear about Yahoo and things. But so it's kind of confusing, but what really happens is, so the liver can make fat from protein, it can make fat from carbohydrates. It doesn't really want to, but it 100% can. And the fat it makes is palmitic acid. It's a 16-carbon saturated fatty acid. That is a fat the liver makes 100% of the time. But, so when this guy said the liver only makes saturated fat, that's what he meant, okay? But it can also elongate that fatty acid to stearic acid, which is 18 carbons long, and then it can unhydrate one of the bonds and make oleic acid. Okay. So it can make oleic acid, but it always starts, the base is palmitic acid, which is saturated fat.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's a technicality. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, but I have that paper now stored. Like, I have a vault of like a billion papers that are just like stored with information. So now I finally have that paper on me. So if this shit ever gets brought up in my imaginary arguments with people, I have a paper. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like the liver, like you're telling me, because it just, what do doctors say about saturated fat?
It causes heart disease. It clogs your arteries.
It'll kill you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I'm saying our liver is producing this fat that's killing us. Like, come on. Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So... That was like probably the best part of this week was me finding that one paper, because I read that book years ago and it's something that's kind of been in the back of my mind bugging me. And I was like, well, how come our body makes this? And, you know, I just got a different information. So I don't know. That happened. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
So you learned something new.
Yeah. I don't know when I will ever apply that information, but it's good to know.
I think about it too much, apparently. I don't know why that something about that really stuck with me for whatever reason. But, yeah, so I guess it's a good time to get into the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, so let's just start off just kind of giving a brief description of what it is.
Sure.
It was invented in the 1980s. So it's primarily vegetables, fruits, whole grains, and legumes. Then the next thing would be like seafood and poultry. You can have those a few times a week. You can eat a moderate amounts of like nuts and seeds, a little bit of yogurt and cheese, barely any red meat, and absolutely no milk.
Completely eliminated.
Yeah, no milk at all. Too much saturated fat in those things.
Yep. And yeah, so I'm looking at a picture of the Mediterranean diet right now, the original food pyramid that was presented, like the first one. And man, it's crazy. So at the very tip of the pyramid is red meat. And it's not even just red meat. It specifically says lean red meat. And underneath that is sweets. So think, you know, candies, cakes, cupcakes, stuff like that. So this diet recommends you have red meat less often than cake. That's crazy.
Yeah. I can't believe that's even a recommendation on
it. Yeah, me either. So, but this was like the diet at the time, or, you know, the thing that was being promoted by all the dietitians and all the governments around the world was the low-fat diet. So in that context, anything with fat in it, like meat, would be just considered a no-no.
Yeah, so it's pretty much like the same standard American diet that we have. But instead of olive oil being towards the top because it's a fat, they moved olive oil and made it its own thing and put it towards the, like, the middle. So it goes like vegetables and then it's olive oil right there. So you're supposed to just drown everything in olive oil.
Yeah. So for whatever reason, olive oil got like a huge pass. So did you want to try and name the, or pronounce the name of the lady who actually was really the pioneer of the diet? Antonia. See, this all came from like Greek and all that area. So the names of these people was hard.
Yeah, we're going to actually skip most of these names because we don't really know how to pronounce them.
Yeah.
Antonia Trichopoulou? I have no idea. That could not have been right.
Yeah, I mean, it's Trichopoulou. So she's kind of the original founder of the diet. And really what happened is she's from Greece and she just noticed that the traditional people of the time were living longer, healthier lives compared to, like, standard Americans. And so she stumbled upon Ansel Keys's original data. And if you don't know who Ansel Keys is, you obviously never listen to this podcast. Because I swear we talk about this guy every week. But he's the original author of the diet-heart hypothesis, claiming that saturated fat causes your body to increase cholesterol causes heart disease, and he's kind of the reason every nation in the world, every dietitian in the world, for at least, you know, from the 60s to very recently, recommended low-fat diets and damned red meat, damned eggs, all that type of stuff. So Ansel Keys, he studied people in the Greek islands, so the island of Crete specifically was a big one, and that's C-R-E-T-E. And so this lady, Antonia, she stumbled upon his data and was like, oh, so he's saying that these people live longer and healthier. So they must be, there must be some part of their diet that is helping them live longer. And she kind of pinpointed that on to olive oil.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know how you can make that conclusion, because for one, like this is like the southern part of Europe. So they get a lot more sunshine. They have, like, very strong family ties, so they're eating family dinners. They're probably living a lot lower stress than a lot of other environments. There's a lot of other factors going on instead of just diet alone.
Yeah, I mean, just close your eyes and picture, like, a beautiful tropic island, like heaven on earth. That's where these people live.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
People pay thousands of dollars to go to these islands. You know what I mean? For a vacation. So that's where they live. So definitely there was a part of their lifestyle, I think, that attributed to their overall health, you know?
Yeah, but there's also a lot wrong with just how they collected the information.
Oh, shit. That is a huge understatement.
Yeah. So when Ansel Keys was doing his seven-country study, so he studied men on Crete and Corfu. So originally, he did two different types of testing. He had an epidemiological test, which is just surveys. What did you eat for the last, like, 2 years? And he had over, like, 655 from each island on, like, what they ate. However, he didn't believe what they wrote down because it didn't fit his data. So he threw out all that information. The other type of information he collected was he actually had people, like, the researchers themselves go and meet with the people that they were testing, and they would review what they ate for the last week. But the only problem is, this is not enough people. It was 33 men on Crete and 34 on Corfu.
Yeah.
So you would need over 600 people from each island to make any sort of statistical correlation. You have 33 and 34. Way too few to make any sort of correlation on this.
Yeah, it's, and honestly, that little fact that he threw away the bulk of his data, and honestly, I'm sure he knew that he needed that number to make any sort of statistical claim. Mm-hmm. But he didn't claim or didn't even state the fact that he threw away the bulk of his data.
No, he just pretended like he had all that information. And so he claims based off of, I mean, what is that? 10%? That's 5% of the data.
5%. Exactly. And it was only the data that half fit the narrative that he wanted. And I was just like, it's crazy the amount of fraud in that study. And I don't know, this stuff wasn't known at the time. When he published the data, no one knew that. They just kind of took him on his word.
Yeah, and what also is crazy is the men on both of these islands drank milk every day. They had 8 ounces of milk on average daily. And what's part of the recommended Mediterranean diet? No milk whatsoever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so there's a little bit of a problem right there, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, if you think about just a Mediterranean diet, that kind of promotes, I don't know, at least an idea that this whole region is healthy and this whole region eats a similar diet. So the countries surrounding the Mediterranean, so which would be, you would say, the Mediterranean area, are Spain, France, Monaco, Italy, Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia, Herzegovina, wherever the shit that is, Montenegro, Albania, Greece, Turkey, Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Egypt, Libya, Tunisia, Algeria, and Morocco.
That's a shit ton of countries.
We're
only talking about information coming from Greece and Italy and a little bit of Spain.
And not even, like, all of it. We're talking, like, specific islands on these places, right? So, to claim it's a Mediterranean diet is just, it's a misnomer. Like, it's just not true.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, there's a whole French paradox which flew in the face of Keyes' data. They eat so much saturated fat.
They do.
And they're a really healthy population.
Though the French, man, I can't remember now. I think it was when we talked about the best foods to eat. We talked about butter, right? Or we talked about saturated fat. So the French eat the most saturated fat, and they have the least incidence of heart disease in the world.
Complete opposite of what Keyes was saying.
Complete opposite. Yeah. And guess what? The French are in the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
But he didn't fit the narrative, so he completely left them out of the study. And honestly, Keyes himself acknowledged, this is a quote from this old person, I'm trying not to cuss too much, he acknowledged that there was substantial differences in the dietary habits across the region. So making a single claim about that region was really impossible, but they did it anyways because it made the diet easier to sell.
I mean, you can just think of it this way, just like how many different diets are there just around our own country? Like, there's drastic differences.
Go to the south.
Yeah. I mean, even just, like, all the different countries, if you want to do, like, the Gulf of Mexico, which is much smaller than the Mediterranean, you'd have, like, Mexico, which is different than Florida, which is completely different than, like, New Orleans food. Like, there's so many differences there. To try to, say one diet for all that area is just crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah. And it's just wrong. It really is. So, yeah, like you said, they drank milk every day, yet milk was completely taken off the list. They actually preferred red meat, so they ate a bunch of red meat, a bunch of goat. That was completely almost taken off the list. They left lean red meat at the very top to be eaten sparingly a few times a month, which is crazy. So pretty much I follow the exact opposite of the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much, so.
So there was a couple of problems with not only just the amount of information he collected, but the times of the year that he collected this. So one of the times that he collected this information was during Lent, when people were pretty much fasting. They were giving up all or most animal foods. That includes fish, cheese, eggs, and butter. So the information they were collecting was off of very limited time. So if they're trying to make grand conclusions from this data, but they're only collecting a small amount when it's completely different than what they eat the rest of the year, there's just no correlation to be made.
Yeah, and so you said they cut out these foods, these high animal, high saturated fat foods for Lent. So it wasn't for health reasons.
No, it was just due to religious reasons and the time of year.
Yes, Lent is supposed to be like a struggle. It's supposed to be a sacrifice.
Yes.
So you get rid of the good shit for you, so your body struggles a little bit. It was nothing healthy about getting rid of these foods. It was nothing that no people weren't like, oh, you know what? We're going to be health conscious for 2 months. It wasn't like that. So to take dietary data from these times is just, honestly, it's fraud. You know, it really is.
So like right now I'm doing a little bit of a fast. So I'm going to be fasting. I started yesterday. I'm either going to be going until Friday, maybe Saturday, kind of depending. I have some plans up in the air for Friday. So if somebody were to come and collect what I'm eating on a daily basis today. I had a cup of black coffee and a cup of bone broth with some added salt. So if somebody were to collect that data for me today, and they were to collect information from two other days throughout the year, and they were to make a grand conclusion from that, my information would be completely off.
Yes.
Like, there's no way you can make any sort of conclusion off of that.
Yeah, just think if they did, they just compared your average calorie intake. A zero on an average completely blows up an average. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so your average would be completely screwed for all your macros, for all your calories, whatever you do.
Yeah, I had like 40 calories today, somewhere around there. I mean, like on an average day, I'm between 3 to 5, depending.
Yeah.
So if you collected one today, and then you got another one where I did like, let's say one meal a day, it's like maybe 2,500, and then another like 3,000, they'd be thinking I average 1,800,
yeah.
When that's not even close.
Not even close at all. Yeah. So, and then they make these grand conclusions like they really know what they're talking about when none of that information is really factual. So yeah, that's crazy. And that's another thing that when Keyes promoted this study, they didn't actually copy that either. They just knew that this data they collected fit their preformed conclusion, so they ran with it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe just how flawed all the science was, but he had so much data and spent so much time collecting it that I think everybody just like, I don't feel like reading this, so I'll disbelieve you. I mean, it seems like what it had to be.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. And
he was so passionate about everything.
Like, yeah.
He would not give you an inch on any of his arguments.
Yeah, everyone says that he was a very dominant personality, always the most dominant personality in every room he went to. And actually, this reminds me of, not to make this a political conversation at all, but just think how many bills get passed every day, your senator, your congressman, whatever. If someone passes you a 30-page document every other day about some bullshit bill, no one wants to read all that dense information, right?
Oh, no, it's so hard to do.
It's so hard to do. And especially the bulk of these people aren't really going to give a shit about it. They're just going to be like, who is this guy? Oh, he's a prominent figure in nutrition. He's giving me a stack of 300 pages of charts of data of fat, protein, and carbs. It's probably right.
Yeah. And just getting this information published, it depends on what journal you're going to and also the way it's presented. But it can go through maybe 2 to 3 peer reviewers or maybe only one.
Yep.
So if a peer reviewer is just basically, hey, here's another scientist in this field, have him read it. Well, if you're buddies with him, he's probably not going to give it like a really fine combing through.
He trusts you.
Yeah, and it's just like, okay, yeah, I'll approve that.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult to do.
It's not that difficult to do at all. Yeah.
So we talked about a lot of the flaws with just how with the Mediterranean diet, how it's pretty much impossible to really define.
Yeah.
So why did it become so popular?
Yeah, well, you had a good line just right off that bat when we were talking about this.
It was food marketing disguised as nutritional science.
Yeah.
And that comes from, I might be paraphrasing, I don't know if it was a direct quote, but it's from Big Fat Surprise by Nina Teicholz.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the information from this podcast is coming from that book.
Yeah, she's definitely the, I guess, inspiration for the podcast. Yeah, it's a great book, by the way. I definitely recommend it.
Oh, yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
So part of the problem with this standard American diet is since it was so low in fat, pretty much all the flavor was removed. I don't know if you're just eating plain broccoli. That's just disgusting. Who wants that?
Who wants that? And people don't, I don't know why, but no one really associates fat with flavor, but that's really what gives our food the flavor, is the fat. So when you cut out fat, everything all of a sudden becomes bland.
I'm just thinking, like, what do you have to do to bacon? You just heat that shit up. You don't need to do anything to it.
No.
And that is, I don't know anybody that doesn't like bacon.
Me either.
And if they don't like bacon, it's because they probably think it's bad for them.
Yes.
Not because it tastes bad.
Mm-hmm.
So olive oil provided that flavor that was lacking from the standard American diet.
Yeah.
So by boosting up the fat, now you have a heart-healthy, quote-unquote, flavorful diet.
Yeah. And I got this thing you have in here. It's backed by a Harvard scientist called Walter Willett. And I can't stand that guy. The guy's such a tool.
Oh, yeah.
But it gave this diet some credibility. You know, when that guy comes on stage, or at least his stamp is on one of your slide points, you know, one of your presentations, people just, I don't know, I guess they want to believe it. You know, they want to believe you.
Well, Harvard in America is regarded as like the top university, the top. If you got that Harvard backing, it must be true.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of understand that. Like they have a really good reputation.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, yeah, this information was just straight garbage.
Yeah. When it comes to nutrition, man, don't listen to Harvard at all. So So yeah, olive oil was added in pretty much, you get the standard American diet, you tweak the macros a little bit, and you add in a shit ton of olive oil, and then you have the Mediterranean diet. And that's because the people on Crete ate approximately 40% of their daily calories from fat, and that was predominantly from olive oil. So the low-fat guidelines at the time recommended a diet of 20% to 30% fat. So 40% on the low end represented a double amount, or excuse me, on the high end, double the amount of fat of the standard American diet. So it gave, I guess, a diet, like you said, with some fat is better than a diet with no fat.
Yeah, it's basically, instead of just eating plain broccoli, now you can have some zucchini sauteed in olive oil. So it made those like fruits and vegetables palatable, you know, made them taste so much better.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't understand why it became popular. If you're going to have to stick to this low-fat diet, you might as well be able to at least eat it or kind of stick to it.
Yeah, at least, yeah. But it wasn't just the fact that fat gave flavor that made this diet kind of popular. There's a whole other kind of backbone, whole other angle to the story that's not about manipulating data. It's not about kind of forcing the narrative. It's all about kind of, would you use the term corruption? I don't know. I mean, corruption might be too hard of a word.
Well, I think that quote earlier, just food marketing disguised as nutrition science. It was just straight food marketing.
Okay. So kind of tell them what they did as far as making people promote the Mediterranean diet in a way that made it seem like magical.
So the olive oil industry, primarily old ways, organized 50 conferences from 1993 through 2004. Yep. So a little over a decade. They partnered with the International Olive Oil Council to fund these getaways. So these getaways were all expenses paid to the most beautiful destinations in Italy and Greece, and scientists, reporters, cookbook authors, and policymakers. So everybody that you need to promote a healthy diet.
From every angle.
In one destination. So they're getting top chefs from Europe cooking some delicious meals. So of course they're going to write about it. They're staying in beautiful destinations. So yep. Of course everybody's going to be happy. So yeah, they just have all these people. They would cycle out the reporters once they stopped writing so much information about it. They'd bring in new ones that would just be so in awe of all of what's going on there that they would keep writing everything. You'd have all these cookbook authors that would be going over there eating these delicious meals. So now they could promote the book to a whole nother area of expertise.
That honeymoon effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Policymakers going over there. So now they have, oh, this is what the healthy diet is. Mm-hmm. So this is what I'm going to like put into law wherever I'm coming from. And then it's all backed by scientists that have that Harvard stamp of approval.
Yep.
So everybody else is going to believe that all that information they're receiving is correct. So it's the perfect like storm to create this policy.
Oh yeah, no, that company Old Ways knew what they were doing. And actually the European Union spent $215 million in 10 years on olive oil related public relations. That's $250 million telling people olive oil is good.
And honestly, like, you shouldn't need to tell somebody that this is a health food. You should be able to know it by the way it tastes and just kind of, like, how you're attracted to it. Like, I don't need anybody to tell me that steak is good for me. Like, that's just delicious. My body craves it. So, yeah. Like, pretty sure it's good for me.
Makes sense, right?
Yeah. So, part of it comes from the belief that olive oil is an ancient food. That we've been consuming, or the Mediterranean diet has been consuming it for thousands upon thousands of years.
This is probably the biggest claim, like the most shocking claim, I think, of this podcast. Everyone knows that we've been eating olive oil for, whatever, 5,000 years.
Athens was named after Athena because her gift to the city was an olive oil tree. She was competing with, I think it was Poseidon. This is Greek mythology. This isn't real. with Poseidon over who would get the favor of these people. Her gift was an olive oil tree. His gift was like some fountain. The people liked the olive oil tree more because like of all the benefits of it. So she got the naming rights of that city. But they didn't use it for food. It wasn't a food source like it is thought of today. Like they weren't consuming that until I think the 1600s at the earliest.
Yeah, at the very earliest. And so there's a quote normally that you'll hear. What is it called? The gold liquid or something like that? Liquid gold?
Liquid gold.
Yeah, so a lot of times you'll hear olive oil be called liquid gold, referring to Homer's Odyssey. There's apparently some quote in there describing olive oil as liquid gold, and kind of in the context that they used to eat this shit. Well, that's wrong. That's completely misquoted. So What he really said was olive oil in a flask of gold, and that was used to anoint himself. It was never mentioned in any ancient texts as being eaten. It was mainly used for cosmetic purposes. So its production expanded in the mid-17th century, mainly for making soaps. Not for culinary purposes until the 19th century. Throughout this entire time, the predominant fat used was lard. And that's just bacon fat.
Yeah, so they were using olive oil for religious ceremonies, for like a cleaning product to kind of like clean your skin with. They weren't using it for cooking with.
No.
It had plenty of other uses.
Yep, 100%, yeah. And it's funny though that the predominant fatty acid in lard is actually oleic acid. They do share the similar fatty acid profile, which is one of the reasons why when people say bacon's unhealthy for you because of fat, I'm like, oh, but you think olive oil is healthy? Because it's damn near the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
But except when you eat, because what happens when you eat bacon? You're getting a complete amino acid profile. You're getting vitamins and minerals and healthy fat, okay?
Yeah.
What happens when you eat olive oil?
You're just getting fat.
Just getting fat, right? So these ancient people were getting the protein, they were getting the vitamins and minerals, but now, today, we're telling you, no, you don't need none of that. Just get the calories from the fat. So that's where, even though the fat's not inherently unhealthy, it's perfectly fine, but you're just negating all the other benefits of lard.
Yeah, you're getting vitamin D along with that too, which is very rare from food sources.
It is very rare.
Another belief that comes from olive oils is that the polyphenols and the flavonoids are believed to have disease-fighting benefits. So those claims have never been supported by like strong scientific evidence. So maybe they're true, maybe they're not. It's still just a hypothesis at this point. So there's really no benefit to it, or no proven benefit.
No proven benefit, no. And really, there have been studies done on just your literal absorption of these chemicals, and our body doesn't absorb them very well. Like, it's not something Saladino says a lot is the operating systems.
Yeah, these are plant-based, not animal-based. We use an animal-based operating system.
Yeah. So our body just doesn't absorb them very well. Even if they do, they might have a beneficial effect with something called what's that term for genetics? It's epigenetics,
yeah.
Right? So either your genes on or off. So these definitely might have a beneficial effect with that. But our body doesn't absorb them very well because it honestly doesn't know what the fuck this is. You know what I'm saying? It's just a different thing. So
one thing I've heard Saladino talk about is with the polyphenols, how they're antioxidants. Well, we can't use those antioxidants, but what they might do is they might increase our body's ability, or not increase our ability, but increase our own production of these antioxidants. So maybe we'll produce more glutathione in response to polyphenols, which could be a good thing or it could be a bad thing. Because one thing that would also increase us our production of glutathione is smoking cigarettes. So maybe that increased production is a good thing, maybe it isn't. So
but what's the trigger?
Yeah, just using like the increased production of antioxidants as a benefit isn't always true.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's such a great point. And he's saying it's not an increased production of those antioxidants, right? Those polyphenols. This is triggering our own, animal-based, like our own operating system and our own antioxidants. So these things aren't some sort of, I don't know, magical chemicals that a lot of people paint them to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like I'm damning olive oil. I think olive oil is kind of neutral.
Yeah, I'm fine with olive oil.
I don't think it's definitely not the superfood that it's claimed to be, but I also don't think it's straight poison like some corn oil or canola oil.
Yeah, me either.
Right now, I think it's more just neutral. It's okay.
It's okay. There's definitely better stuff out there, but it's okay. So there were a few studies I want to touch on that kind of, I guess, pro-Mediterranean diet people will preach or pro-olive oil people will preach. So there was a study in 2003 published.
Wait, 2003. This is 20 years after it came on the market and was already promoted as being healthy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and actually, that's a good point because all these recommendations from the, I guess it was 1977 when the national dietary guidelines came in, all the studies showing hey, maybe we should lower our salt, hey, maybe we should lower our cholesterol, none of those studies were done, but we still made the advice to change our diets. It wasn't until 20 years later when we actually had time to study that this diets came back, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it just sucks that we have to prove that something's unhealthy to reverse the law instead of them having to prove that it was healthy before they made the law.
Yes.
It's backwards.
It's so backwards. And you said it, we have a podcast on toxins all around us talking about kind of skincare products. And you said in order for a product to be taken off the market, it has to be shown to be harmful.
Right? Yes, and most likely it's going to be like an internal investigation. Like they're kind of in charge of policing themselves, like those skincare companies.
Like, who's going to do that?
Yeah, and there's, I don't really know how you can prove that your deodorant was harming you. I guess you need enough epidemiological evidence that this one brand of deodorant made 700,000 people sick, and this was the one thing that they all had in common.
Yeah.
Like, to collect that information is just so damn difficult.
So daunting.
Yeah.
And no one's going to do it to put their own product out of business.
Yeah. So it's just like getting the funding to do some of this stuff is just, it's just not possible.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. So, but there was a study done in 2003, published in the New England Journal of Medicine by that lady, Trichopoulou, the main Mediterranean lady.
Just say Antonia.
Yeah, I should just say Antonia, yeah. So, claiming that the Mediterranean diet reduced overall mortality. Like, that was kind of, that was the header. That's what everyone read. But, however, that didn't even measure the amount of olive oil ate by the people. It wasn't even an item on the food frequency questionnaire, which this study was. And I need a better word for a study, because study gives this shit too much, like, credibility.
Yeah, because they're not really studying anything.
No, they're not. These are food questionnaires. Hey, what did you eat last year? Write this down and send it back. Like, that's just such weak data. But whatever. So this author, and again, this lady has a literal investment in making the Mediterranean diet look positive. She simply estimated the amount of olive oil used by these people based off the food they ate. So she was like, okay, everyone that ate broccoli, they would put 5 tablespoons of olive oil on broccoli. So every time she saw broccoli, she put 5 tablespoons of olive oil. Even though that was never part of the questionnaire, none of that data ever existed. She made that up herself. And does she have a literal narrative to paint? Yes, she does.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. How are you going to make a conclusion off of something that it wasn't even part of the study?
Nope.
There's no data collected on it, so you can't make any conclusion on that. That's crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah. But then again, that wasn't in the title of the study. The title of the study mentioned the Mediterranean diet, which everyone knew by this point recommended olive oil, helped reduce overall mortality. And we both know everyone stops reading after the title.
Pretty much. I mean, maybe if you're a nerd, you'll click on it. Maybe you read the abstract. Maybe read some of the conclusions. Maybe. You're not going to be reading the entire study itself.
Not at all. Exactly. So that's one of the ones. It's just a super weak study. It's not good. There's another one called the Lion Heart Study, which, again, that study didn't even use olive oil. So the fact that it makes any claim of olive oil is shady. It used canola oil.
It was like a Mediterranean-like diet.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't a Mediterranean diet. It
wasn't a Mediterranean diet at all. So that study, you can't really make any conclusions from the Mediterranean diet based off that study. And there is something called the intervention effect. And so the placebo effect really is real. You know, that definitely happens. That definitely does change the results of studies. So there was a group of people who did get intervention. So they met with dietitians. They met with doctors monthly. They got their blood work done. Kind of reminding them frequently that they were part of a study, and almost that they were special. They were important.
We're giving you advice. You're going to get better. You're seeing a doctor because you're sick. You go into the doctor. The doctor is going to take care of you.
Yes.
So you have that belief that you're going to get better.
And these people, their results did sway in the fact that these people did get better. But the people on the other side of this, they were just told the initial part of the study, hey, do what you do, and then we'll collect data from you in a couple years.
So they have no belief that they're going to get any better, because no. They're not getting any sort of advice, not getting any sort of real intervention.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that study did not take into effect something called the intervention effect. So the results from that have to be kind of looked at in a skeptical light.
Yeah, because the placebo effect is real. So the real, like, gold standard is a double-blind study. So that would be where the scientists that are doing the study, they don't know which one's a control group and which one isn't. So they're giving the same advice, or they're going in there with the same attitude. The control group, they're getting one thing. The other group is getting another. And there's nobody knows.
No one knows shit.
Yeah, nobody knows if they're the placebo group or if they're the actual ones getting the intervention. Everybody's just kept blind. And that's the way you've got to do it.
You do, and that's what you have to do to get any sort of reliable data, because it's so easy to manipulate data to get the results you want.
Oh, for sure.
Like, it's not hard at all. So
yeah, the power of belief is crazy powerful.
It's real. It really is, yeah. So there's another study used often called the Indo-Mediterranean Heart Study. And that study, again, it was Mediterranean light. It really wasn't really the Mediterranean diet, but it's used from pro-Mediterranean diet people to kind of show that diet's good, that was suspected of research fraud. The daily food diaries were fabricated 100%. And so the British Journal, Medical Journal, said the data was either fabricated or falsified. So pretty much that study just should never be brought up ever again.
And these are the studies that are showing support of the Mediterranean diet.
Yes.
This is what, if you have, like, if you read a pro-Mediterranean diet article, the studies listed are going to be one of these three.
100% they will. Go to the references, they'll be one of these. Yeah. There is one study, however, you said it was an Israel study?
Yes, it's from Israel. I don't know what the name of it was.
Okay, yeah. So I totally forgot that. But I guess go into that a little bit. Because this one's actually, this was probably the best study done on the Mediterranean diet.
Oh, yeah. This one was conducted in 2008. So they compared the Mediterranean diet to the low-fat diet to a low-carb diet. But we'll talk about the low-carb part of it later.
Yeah.
So this study was over 2 years long. It was with 322 obese middle-aged people. So
good sample size, a good length of time.
Yeah, definitely. So the Mediterranean diet was so much better than the low-fat diet. They lost more weight, they had lower triglycerides, higher HDL, which is the quote-unquote good cholesterol.
Yep.
And they also lowered their LDL, the bad cholesterol.
Which is not bad cholesterol, by the way.
No, not at all.
But that's just the narrative, at least.
So pretty much on everything that they were testing, the Mediterranean diet was far better than the low-fat diet. But the low-carb diet was even better.
Hold on,
single field.
I want to stop you there. So if you're going to go online and read a review of this paper, half the time they won't even mention that third group.
No, because they got the information that they wanted, that the Mediterranean diet was better than the standard American diet.
Yes, and they stopped there. A lot of papers didn't even mention that there was an entire third group, a low-carb group, and that the numbers that they pulled.
Yes, and the low-carb was better in every single measurable factor.
Everything.
Low-carb was best at everything, Mediterranean was in the middle on everything, and the standard American diet, or the low-fat diet, was worse in everything.
Crazy.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I'm not even a big fan of a lot of the things that they were measuring, but this is their standard, these measuring tools, and their diet did the worst.
And they still lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Mediterranean diet, the only quote-unquote benefit it had from their perspective was it had the lowest LDL value, but we both know that low LDL is not a good thing. High LDL is actually a good thing in the context of a natural, human, healthy body. So even that effect isn't necessarily a good thing.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, LDL is a pretty bad measuring tool. I mean, like, the gold standard for heart disease is a CAC scan.
Yep.
And then outside of that, it'd be, like, triglycerides to HDL ratio.
Yep.
I mean, if your LDL is crazy low or crazy high, then you might want to look into further testing, but I would do a CAC scan, which would be my next go-to.
And see what's actually going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the number itself is damn near useless, but you do, if you're following just a standard, healthy, whole food-based diet, either, I don't care if it's low-carb, carnivore, keto, whatever, high LDL is actually a good thing. It's protective. It's an innate part of our immune system, so it helps us fight against diseases. It helps us live healthy, long lives. And if you want to learn more about LDL, we have a whole podcast on it. I think it's one on eggs, so it's like the benefit of eggs and cholesterol, so you can check that out.
Yeah, so pretty much the only conclusion that you can make is that a Mediterranean diet is better than a low-fat diet. And I think that the only reasoning is because it's higher in fat.
That's it.
I think like that's pretty much the only conclusion that you can make about a Mediterranean diet versus the standard American.
It's not that good. And I mean, at least, like, I guess, yeah, this whole podcast did come off like we were damning olive oil. I'm not damning olive oil. Like, if they wanted to make this diet worse, they could have used soy oil. They could have used corn oil, and that would have been technically a higher fat diet. But since those oils are poisoned, the results would not have been as well. So olive oil being a monounsaturated fat is pretty heat stable. So cooking with it's not a problem. Eating it's not a problem. It's not going to oxidize very easily. And when a fat oxidizes, it pretty much becomes unstable, and it produces a lot of byproducts that are unhealthy and negative to our own body. So that's why we like saturated fat. That's why our body produces saturated fat. And that's why monounsaturated fat is still pretty stable and still fine to eat. So I don't want people to think that olive oil is unhealthy. Or, excuse me, super like bad for you or super good for you. It's kind of neutral, but the Mediterranean diet as a whole is just, it's honestly shit. It's what you shouldn't do if you're trying to lose weight. Do not try the Mediterranean diet. That's not the way to go. There are so many other better options out there.
Yeah, it was just pretty much everything that's been said about it is just based off of some very, very fraudulent information. And their claims have not been backed by any sort of strong science at all. If anything, all the science behind it is showing that low carb is far better.
Yep.
In almost every way.
Yeah. The one good study done on it says low carb was better. And guess what it is? When we go over the diets to do, guess what? Low carb is going to be one of them.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, that's good. I guess we covered that okay. Did you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I've talked about this one before or not. I think I might have talked about that in the toxins all around us. But mm-hmm. I just had this conversation the other day while I was at the store. I was buying toothpaste. And somebody was buying like some activated charcoal toothpaste. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why this like came out of my head. I was like, hey, you don't want that one. Like, that's not the best. It was obviously somebody that cared about, you know, getting good toothpaste.
Oh, you said this to a stranger in the line? Okay.
Well, like, it wasn't...
God, I never do that.
We were in the aisle. I don't know. Like, I normally don't either. I'm just like, whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you're going for activated charcoal, you're making a choice like, hey, I'm going for the healthy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the problems with activated charcoal, one is like, so they're claimed to be healthy because they bind to metals and they take metals out of your body. It's like a way to detoxify yourself. So another name for metals in our body is minerals. So if they do bind to metals, they're also going to bind to minerals. Well, what are minerals? That's what your teeth is made out of.
Yeah, you ever heard of calcium?
Yeah. So it's going to bind to the minerals that make up our teeth, and it's going to strip your teeth, make your teeth weaker over time, which is, I'm guessing, not what you want if you're, you know, trying to take care of your teeth and, like, brushing your teeth every day.
Yeah.
So you probably don't want to be doing that.
Yeah, that's so counterintuitive. And you're right. That person getting activated charcoal, what do you call it, toothpaste, is going to have somewhat of an informed opinion, and you're just kind of saying, hey, you know, what you heard isn't right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was nice of you.
Yeah. I mean, they bought a different one. Or at least they put that one down and, like, picked up a different one while I was in the aisle. Maybe they swapped it back. I don't know.
Like, who's this crazy guy?
I didn't see him in the checkout aisle. But, yeah, that's something I normally don't do. It was just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Not me in the right mood, I guess.
You know, did I tell a story where I recommend, like, one time at the store, I turned into, like, a salesperson for meat? Did I tell you that story?
No.
Oh, of course. Yeah. So, like, these old ladies were, So I put in like big ass orders at the grocery store. So usually I have to wait. Like I'm waiting there for 20 minutes for them to cut the meat or ground the meat, whatever. So they're in the back, like the butcher doing my order, and people will come up front kind of waiting to get help. And one time this old lady was looking for, I guess she was looking for fish, and she didn't know what to get. And she's like, oh, she didn't know what the word was. She wanted omega-3 fish. You know what I'm saying? Okay. She wanted something fatty, right? And I was like, oh, you know, you want to go for these fattier cuts, go for a salmon. It's great. She's like, okay. And I was like, and if you want, there's a salmon roe right here. I was like, do you take a fish oil pill? I was like, these are like nature's fish oil pill, right? So I went this whole spiel about what to do, and I told her to do that. And I don't know. I think she ended up walking off because the butcher was in the back so long. But yeah, I mean, sometimes at the grocery store, I do give some advice.
I was doing that mostly at the farmer's market.
Yeah.
Because, like, a farmer's market, you think of pretty much just vegetables and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So there was... I've talked about these people all the time, Golden Acorn Farms. They have forest-raised, like, pigs and everything.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would just kind of, like, look, because they're the only ones selling meat in the entire farmer's market. It's kind of rare. So people would kind of, like, come up and, like, look at it. And if, like, they had any questions, I would just, like, just go off on a tangent. It's, like, how good this meat is, like, how mm-hmm. beneficial it is, and how much healthier it is than, like, anything else here.
Yeah.
So, like, I know I definitely helped them out, like, a little bit.
That's good. Yeah. I think we should do that more often, honestly. If we're, like I've said a million times, everyone has an opinion, but is your opinion informed? And at least with this shit, our opinion's informed.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I'm always about supporting the people that are doing it the right way, if I can. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I can afford to support the right people, I will. So these people are doing it right, so I'm definitely supporting them with my money, and if I can support them with other people's money too, like, why not?
Why not? Exactly. Well, all right, cool. No, that's a good tip of the week, and thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you guys all enjoyed it. You can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and review on the podcast. You can do that on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or YouTube. And if you can, please feel free to donate. You can find that yellow button on our homepage of our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.